point at. But I think, you know, what we're missing right now is helping people really understand and really be able to define just how big the creator economy is going to be, to the point where eventually we're just going to have to drop the creator.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. With me today, Sam Christie, VP, Head of Sales at Peerpo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Alessandro.
So how was your week?
Our week was good. You know, last week of the quarter when we're recording right now. So it's a little bit of a rush to get to Friday, and then everything's kind of spoken for. So you're probably catching me on the best day this week. I'll say that.
Fantastic. Love it. So we have the best of your energy today for this episode.
Exactly,
it's going to be, right. I think, quite interesting for anyone that is interested, of course, about you, about Peerpo. But first of all, can you tell us a bit more about yourself? Because you come from different backgrounds, and I think it would be really interesting to know more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a kind of a funny background, you know, very much kind of a bi-coastal type of upbringing. Grew up in the Connecticut, New York, Northeastern area, went to school in that area. And, you know, let's call it mid to late 2000s, you know, during the era of Mad Men, when we all thought, you know, Don Draper was the coolest without all of the awfulness in his personal life. Advertising was right where I went right down to Madison Avenue. A number of creative agencies and media agencies along the way, really had a chance to, you know, I like to think of agencies as really kind of teaching you all of the little things you need to do to bring yourself together to kind of figure out what you want to achieve in an advertising and marketing world. And found myself quickly wanting to move to Los Angeles. So my then girlfriend, now wife, came out to Los Angeles together, more agencies, more creative and media, and found myself at a time in the agency space where, we went from really focusing on, you know, Google and pay-per-click, was very deep in the search world. And of course, at that time, we see Facebook Marketplace coming up, Ad Marketplace, I should say. And they started kind of taking all the folks who knew search and they moved them over to social. And so with that really kind of entered my foray into the social space. Had some really great opportunities to help usher, you know, a handful of kind of Fortune 50 brands onto social, really just kind of a first presence, so to speak. You know, and of course, this is when carousels were brand new on Instagram. Statics were still, you know, very much the way forward for creative. And sure enough, I found this video platform that had really, you know, it was starting to take the world by storm, called Musical.ly. Musical.ly, of course, now became TikTok. And I actually started with Musical.ly right as the rebrand was happening. So I was at TikTok, you know, late 2018, going over there, just realizing that this sight, sound, motion driven platform that was just so powerful in terms of engaging people and obviously connecting with audiences. It's what every brand wanted. So spent about three and a half years, I'll say almost 4 years within the ByteDance community, working in various roles, led a few sales teams on the West Coast, led our entertainment team at TikTok for some time, and found myself from there really realizing the mantra all along was, don't make ads, make TikToks. How do you do that? You work with creators. And I found that there were a number of companies in the space, Influencer Marketing Factory included, that really was helping facilitate that operation, helping bring that to life and really giving creators an opportunity to really help make those TikToks on behalf of brands. I found Peerpop as a great platform and means to really help connect brand and creator within its marketplace. And just a couple months later, a couple conversations later, here I am, almost done or almost into Q4 working with Peerpop and, fortunately bringing Peerpop out to the masses, so to speak, as we try to get more brands working with more creators.
Fantastic. Thank you so much also for going, you know, in the background of all the ByteDance era that, started from Musical.ly. I mean, we work in these, so we know what was Musical.ly and how it became TikTok and, you know, like how also TikTok evolved. Sometimes still, it's funny to me that people like didn't know that Musical.ly became actually TikTok and right. They don't know like what happened before, like with Vine and Twitter. Like there is a lot of things that if you're working into this, you know, and of course it's like common sense, it's something that's well known, but it's funny to me that sometimes people like, you know, they have their little gap, right, of knowledge there. And it's really great to talk with someone like you that have been there from the beginning, because I'm pretty sure that you saw it evolving, right? Not just change, but evolving. And we're going to go there a bit later during our conversation. We'd love to know more about that. But you mentioned Peerpop, right? So it's the company that you're working in now, VP, head of sales. So you, I'm pretty sure you're doing a really great job in, you know, monitoring many things at the same time, talking with many people, creators, brands, B2B, everything like that. But first of all, for people that might not know about Peerpop, first of all, what it is and why was it created?
Yeah, of course. So Peerpop at its core is a creator collaboration platform. It's been around for, I want to say, about 2 years now, and very much born in the vein of kind of the TikTok era, I should say. But it was really born out of a need and a recognition of the creator economy really booming, and finding that there was so much attention and really, you know, a couple thousand creators very quickly turned into hundreds of thousands, into millions of people who were creating content on a regular basis in all these different platforms and all these different streams. What you come to realize, however, that it's a very small percentage of people who are truly earning a living being a content creator. And so what Peerpop was really founded on was this notion of, or I should say a mission of, helping creators earn a living doing what they love. And what that really means is, you know, when we think about creators today, it's really easy to think about people who are in the tens, 50s, hundreds of millions of followers. They've been working with various brands. They now have their own IP. They are now building their own companies. But there are many of those mid-tier, micro, nano creators out there who make fantastic content, have very devout audiences, high engagement. But of course, maybe their content is a bit more niche. Maybe there's an opportunity there that they don't necessarily have the wide-ranging appeal in terms of bringing in millions and millions of people as an audience here. And so the whole idea of our marketplace was really to help facilitate better connection between creators and brands. And it's very much a two-sided marketplace in that sense. You know, we really want to help on one side creators monetize their presence. So they're here to monetize. They're here to make money and really find means of doing so. And on the other side, we have brands coming in and regularly, if it's music labels, if it's CPG brands, automotive brands, tech brands, whomever coming to our platform, curating these different briefs, challenges we like to call them, and allowing our creators to respond to those within our community. Their response then in turn is actually paid for based on its performance. So if I'm a creator, and I wish I was, I just talk about them, I could very easily post a piece of content, and then depending on its resonance, let's say, you know, within the For You page, it drives 50,000, 100,000, 500,000 views. We have creators of all shapes and sizes, you know, from 10,000 followers all the way up to, you know, above 2 million is kind of our sweet spot. We're able to see creators start actually making money off of that. $50 here, $100 there, $1,000 there if something truly, you know, goes above like the million view mark or 500,000 view mark or something along those lines. And what it really boils down to, I think the simplest way to look at it as, we're taking the creator economy and we're trying to build something akin to an Airbnb. You know, we're making it really easy for brands and creators to connect. We don't have to go through the motions of weeks upon weeks of executing campaigns. What we're really doing is help connect people instantaneously and helping creators scale their own content and make a living, while brands in return get high value content at scale coming out the other side. So the result has been, you know, 71% of our creators today who've made money are under a million followers. And we've paid out over $10 million in funds in a very, you know, under 2 year span here. So really kind of ensuring our creator economy is alive and well with all shapes and sizes.
That's amazing. Yeah, especially when you say about, you know, the people that have less than 1 million followers. I do still believe that a lot of content creators, you know, influencers, some of them in the mid-tier, they do not realize that actually can make money. I mean, not all of them. A lot of them, they are understanding they have leverage. But still, whenever sometimes I talk with maybe smaller creators, they are either a bit afraid of asking like for money, or they're like, they don't position themselves, like they don't think that they have like the leverage, but actually they do, right? And especially in a more like sort of programmatic way to think about your influence, you can really, you don't need necessarily sometimes, right, crazy numbers to start. And you said that you can really actually start with like 10,000, you know, followers on certain social media, right? So you really can have the power to get in front of a lot of people. And is there any other metrics that you noticed? Because we said it's 71%. Is there anything else that you maybe, I don't know, like either excite you to talk about or shocked you? Because sometimes we don't even know about certain numbers and they come up sometimes.
Yeah, of course. I think a big piece of why Pairpop is so attractive to creators today is we're truly focused on building a community of creators within our space. And so I was very excited to kind of come on at a time where when I started at Pairpop, we had about 150,000 creators on our platform. Again, they're all here for the same purpose, connecting with one another, connecting with the brands to actually earn a living. And today that number is actually over 200,000 creators. So we're actually seeing this community is continually expanding. And it's such an engaged community to the point that anytime we're working with a brand, we are looking within, we're looking inward to really find people within our community, because we like to ensure that, one, we know that they produce great content. They're creators that we can trust. We know that they're creators who are folks who output is always going to be top notch. And at the end of the day, we're looking to support each other. So with that, I think finding a community within this space and really being able to scale that further. Our company is really focused on creator volume, how many creators are here, but really also on their engagement. And I think if you take those two things and you have brands enter into the equation, all of a sudden you have a company here that's going to be able to scale many times over for many years to come as the creator economy continues to expand.
Brilliant. And all of these, right, also thanks to short form videos, right, that we mentioned at the beginning before. We all know that, of course, YouTube is still a big player, but in order to get to a certain number of subscribers, you have to, work years. And we noticed that in our creator economy report, when we asked it to people, like, how much are you making? Like, it was all anonymous, but we really realized that on YouTube, people takes like maybe 4 to 6 years to get to a certain really good position where you are making a lot of money. For Instagram, it's a bit different, but what changes things was TikTok, right? Many people during COVID, they became in the 1 million plus, I don't want to say overnight, but some of them in 2-3 months time of period of time. So you've been there from the beginning. How did you see it evolving, TikTok as some people say that it's a social media, others say that it's an entertainment app. How did you see it evolving? And also, why do you think it was so of a revolution in the space? What did they bring to the table that was not there before?
Yeah, that's a great question. I very much think of TikTok as an entertainment platform. When we were really kind of coming to terms with what TikTok was in late 2018, we realized very quickly that the means of which people consume media and content on TikTok truly is like nothing else. It is much more akin to a Netflix, a Hulu, an Apple TV Plus than it is a Facebook or even a Snapchat or a Twitter. And in many ways, I think that type of consumption and the way that we're so engaged in different TikTok content, it truly, I think, has upended how everybody thinks of just video consumption in general, not just content on your phone or on a larger screen or on an airplane or anything like that. And I think TikTok's differentiator was certainly rooted in those kind of entertainment, I would say, that entertainment genesis. But I also think that, you know, when we look back at the marketplace in even 2017 or 2018, we already saw that there were seedlings of something akin to TikTok were already there. You mentioned Vine. Musical.ly, of course, is kind of the earlier phase of TikTok. I think what we come to realize is the world just wasn't quite ready yet. You know, everybody loves Vine. We love our 6-second videos, and it truly is, you know, an amazing platform. I still look at old Vine compilations and, you know, laugh my head off. But I think when we think about what was needed for TikTok to really scale, we really needed devices that were going to allow us to really love the sight, sound, and motion aspect and be okay with it. I think being okay and accepting the fact that videos are going to play instantaneously, the sound is going to be on, it's going to be full screen, it's going to command your full attention. We weren't ready for that until 2018, maybe not even 2018, 2019, and then, of course, 2020. We see this kind of massive surge because, of course, at that time, everybody is, you know, March 2020, we're all looking for certain means to escape, certain means to disconnect. And TikTok, of course, the disconnect still kept us on our phones, but it allowed us to immerse into a different world. And that world, of course, is just exploded more than I think even the most aggressive analysts could have imagined in terms of it really taking hold. So truly, I think it's timing. I think it's the technology that we work with in our day-to-day in our day-to-day world. And, you know, I personally love the platform. I'm also quickly seeing that a lot of other places are adapting and evolving around what TikTok has done so well. And so I'm personally very excited to see what YouTube Shorts can do in a very short term, you know, what sort of a stronghold it can take on the market. You know, how can YouTube take advantage of the success it's already had and kind of the footprint it already has in the space to be able to go toe to toe with a platform that's gained so much popularity in such a short span. So it's a very exciting space to be. I will say that.
Absolutely. And I also love that you said about you watching, Vine compilations, because I do the same. And like just yesterday night before going to bed, I was actually on TikTok watching accounts that are republishing the famous Vine, you know, like they became so those compilations that were before YouTube are still on YouTube. But to me, it's a bit funny, like it's almost meta, this thing, like, you know, they are like watching these, Vine compilation on TikTok. And I do agree with you, it was not the right time for Vine at the time. And also I do believe that it happened because there was not the idea of creator funds and that actually creators were able to make stable income. In fact, when Vine was discontinued, it's because people were like, okay, this is nice, but I'm not making money, so I'm flying to YouTube, right? That actually has a CPM model, has been strong for 10 years already. And I do really believe that sometimes there are certain apps that are brilliant, but they are like just ahead of time and people are not either used, or brands do not see the potential. And if there is no money involved, especially nowadays, I don't think that a lot of people want to create any more content just because of passion, because they are realizing that you can make actually a living. So a lot of people, they do, of course, and they grind. But I also do believe that everyone is offering now money to creators. So, you know, you have to also have a good leverage. If there is no money involved, unfortunately, and also just for that, I would say that it's fair, right? People are creating content, they're putting a lot of time and work in that. So you should actually make money, right? It's not just a passion or a hobby. It's a job, right? So all this to say that the creator economy is evolving. It's growing like crazy in the past couple of years, but also influencer marketing. Do you think, in your opinion, where are we at in terms of influencer marketing? Is it at the infancy? Because some people are saying it's only 10 years old. Some others are like, we are in the middle of it. And I read some articles that were like, oh, it's the end of influencer marketing. You know, every year there is someone that is saying that it's the end of influencer marketing. I laugh about a bit, you know, because they said that for every type of industry, about SEO, about SEM. Every year someone is telling that it's the end of that. What is your opinion on that? And do you also think that brands at this specific time, are they investing enough? Should they invest more? Should they invest less? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I don't know if this is a new answer necessarily, but I do think we're in the infancy of a creator marketing or influencer marketing or any creator marketplace. I think we're getting glimpses of the future, but what I really think, in order for influencer marketing to truly scale, we need more of that support behind it in order to allow it to scale. And so I think what we find today is influencer marketing, brands being able to engage with creators, we're still in the very early days of actually facilitating that. I think operationally speaking, it is still very much almost a very manual process of reaching out to this person, this person's management, this type of negotiation, and it takes a lot of time. And I think it's companies like ours that really are helping show glimpses of the future where we can start automating that, we can start streamlining that, and we can give brands better access instantaneously to such valuable talent and be able to truly see the returns. I think the returns are the other piece as well. I think, you know, right now we know that creators do a really wonderful job at driving awareness of your brand, driving consideration of your brand, you know, allowing people on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube to discover a brand that they've never heard of before. And very quickly, I think we're actually going to start figuring out how to actually help that talent actually drive bottom line sales. To that end, I think brands will start to invest more as well. I say we're early because I think brands only have a small taste of what the impact or what the effect creators can have on their sales, on their awareness, on how consumers receive their brand as well. And I think, you know, in an age where we're all looking for new ways to connect to brands and new ways to connect to audiences, very quickly brands are going to have to figure out how to get closer to them faster. And I think that's where we come in.
And I absolutely do agree. I really think that the new era of, you know, all the creator economy, but especially influencer marketing, is still at the beginning. And I can see that because whenever you are into this on a daily operation, you think that, you know, you have big budgets and everything. But if you have a helicopter view and you look at other things that have been from ages, like the normal, let's say, media and programmatic and, you know, even just the creative agencies, like influencer marketing is still getting like a smaller, way smaller percentage compared to other, you know, again, like, you know, type of media that are out there. So I think that if you're working to this, you only, you know, breathe influencer marketing every day, you think that maybe it's going like, you know, it's already there. But actually, if you look it from like a bit, you know, more far away, you really realize that it's just the beginning. And I also do believe when you say, I do agree when you say that also content creators need more support. I still find that some people are a bit lost. Could be either because they don't know how to manage their own taxes, they don't know how to present themselves right to the public, you know, and even regulation, like always, it takes years, right, for government to understand certain things, for tech to understand sure how to help, you know, content creators and so on. So I really do believe in that. And the opposite of the infancy of the creator economy is that is TV, right? So if you're looking at what is the opposite of that, is TV, is billboards, is traditional media, right? And maybe if you saw the news, but for example, Netflix now introduced a new ad model that, if I'm not mistaken, runs about $65 cost per mil, right? So every 1,000 impressions, that is going to be the cost. While for influencers, it's actually a fraction of that. So do you think it's just about numbers, what else an influencer can actually add, you know, and bring to the table? So again, we said CPM, CPC, all these models, CPI, if it is like install of apps, but what else can actually a content creator bring on the table, you know, compared to maybe something that is just an advertisement that you see on a screen?
Yeah, I have been closely following Netflix's soon to launch, I think, ad supported tier at the 65 CPM. I think the Super Bowl as well. I think I read anywhere between $50 and $55 CPMs as well. And I think when you look at those spaces, we have to understand those are premium spaces to be in, right? These are places where brands want to be front and center. Obviously, big full screen sound on experiences, they're going to pay for it. They're going to pay a premium dollar for it. And I think what we can do on the creator side is really define, well, what does premium mean for creators? Does that mean people with higher follower counts? Does that mean people who leaned into certain categories or have certain followings already within certain spaces? If that's, you know, people who are already deep into cosmetics, people who are already deep into entertainment or all these different verticals. And I think there's a way for us to help define, you know, what the value of our premium can look like against the value of premium OTT or premium television or other spaces where, you know, the dollar may not go as far necessarily. And so we often work with creators who, again, do command a higher price tag. But when you do the math out and you actually do the math of their CPMs comparative to the actual video views that they're driving, the actual scale we find, you still find that premium content can still be found at CPMs that are $10, $8, $15, even $20 you can justify if that value is still there. If the value is exchanged and you're able to see that someone with 10 million followers is able to drive action, drive results, drive eyeballs, and drive reach, ultimately a brand and an agency can look at that and say that was a dollar worth investing. And I think today we're seeing a lot of that. We see Khaby Lame was on, I believe it was a Hugo Boss ad that was deemed the best ad on TikTok. It was just him and another gentleman wearing Hugo Boss against a white backdrop, and it generated amazing views, amazing press, you know, their PR and the kind of the organic reach that disseminated off of that. Khaby is obviously the number one TikToker from a follower perspective. If you were to do the math out and understand what the actual all-in, all of those media impressions, paid and earned, if we were to do that and calculate that CPM out, I can guarantee you that's a very, very low CPM and a very low investment for all the return that they had gotten. So again, I think it's just a, you know, in a world where premium will win, premium and the Super Bowl and Netflix will still command high dollars, as they should, as will influencers, as will we in terms of what does premium mean and what does premium value mean. ultimately, I think a $15 CPM with a great creator is going to outweigh and probably win against a $65 CPM on, say, a Netflix or a Super Bowl, just in terms of how well, you know, you will be able to reach and how you'll be able to engage.
And yeah, I mean, it also depends by the goal, right? And the type of industry you're in and the history of your brand, right? Maybe you want to be on, you know, during the Super Bowl because of your history as a brand, or maybe you don't want to be there and you just want to use influencers. And, you know, so, something also that a lot of people do not sometimes maybe see it is that whenever you actually pay an influencer, you're not just getting content, you're getting content, potentially earned media, user-generated content, especially on TikTok with the duet and stitch, like you can really start from one video and having potentially thousands of videos, right? And then you also get actually this sort of bilateral communication, right? Between you, the influencers get back to you. Then there is a community that talks with the influencer. The influencer get back to the... There is a conversation about that. So you're buying today for $1 something that actually can have the value of 10, while sometimes with traditional media, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against traditional media. Just say that sometimes when you buy traditional media, you mostly get one thing. It's really transactional as a thing, right? I'm buying the space and that's about it. It's difficult sometimes to track. It's difficult to understand who is the demographic and so on. While on thanks to influencer marketing, you can get so much more out of it. You can, and then apart from all the data that are really important, that you have the human side that especially I think nowadays, a new generation, they really care the most. They want to be sure that they have the same values as their favorite influencers, and their favorite influencers are aligned, they have the same values of their favorite brands, right? There is much more, I'd say, right? It's a crucial aspect for a lot of new generation where if you want to buy something, you want to be sure that they align with you more than just, again, you know, the brand itself as a name, right? But also what is behind that. And so what do you think is... The future of the creator economy, do you think that, so you already said that before, you mentioned that it's the infancy, that creators should have more support, but is there anything else that you think that is either missing or maybe that other countries outside the US are doing better? Is there any format we should introduce also in the US, in Europe, or like what do you think that is missing as of now in the creator economy and the influencer marketing industry?
That's a great question. I think if I think short term, I think people are still searching for what the true definition of the creator economy really is. You know, right now we think of creators as TikTokers, YouTubers, Instagrammers, you know, people who are really focusing their brand and focusing their entire being on these social platforms. But what we're discovering is that that is just one piece of a very large pie when we talk about what the creator economy can become. You know, we talk a lot about Mr. Beast. You know, everybody has likely seen the Mr. Beast burgers opening at the mall. And he thought it was going to be a couple hundred people and turns out to be tens of thousands of people coming to this space. And, you know, we're all kind of taken aback by it, but I don't think we should be. I think we need to really kind of embrace and understand that, you know, Mr. Beast is not just going to be on YouTube. In fact, he's going to do a lot more than that. And he's the shining example, like a really great example that we can point at. But I think, you know, what we're missing right now is helping people really understand and really be able to define just how big the creator economy is going to be, to the point where eventually we're just going to have to drop the creator, because ultimately we've been able to find a new way, truly facilitate a new way of really defining, you know, all of these creators are entrepreneurs in a huge way. Actors are entrepreneurs. Anybody who is putting themselves on screen, they are seeking a way to really grow their own presence. And Pairpop in one space is helping do that on digital platforms and helping do that in a video sense. But in a very short amount of time, fairly soon, it's already happening. I think entrepreneuring or that entrepreneurial spirit is going to take what's happened in a video space where someone has such love, such engagement, such attachment to its audience in that space. Take that audience, take that community, and be able to expand to something else. If that's something like Mr. Beast Burgers, something like Feastable, something like all these different retail products we're seeing pop up in Walmart, and the audiences who are following these products and following these creators are eventually going to grow out of Gen Z. They're eventually going to get older. They're eventually going to have more disposable income, and we're eventually going to see those creators really start to take over from a new product perspective, business perspective, and truly kind of redefine, really transcend well beyond being a TikTok star during a certain point in their lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, we always, of course, talk about Gen Z, but I'm already starting to look at, you know, potentially Gen Alpha, you know, it's getting there, right? And Gen Z Absolutely. Was like, I don't want to say an hybrid, but Gen Alpha is going to be 100%, not just in social media, in the metaverse. And so it's going to also be interesting to see, again, what is going to happen there. Because as you correctly said, a lot of the time, traditional media are mostly talking about Mr. Beast or now Emma Chamberlain, but just always the same name, like Twitch. If you're not into Twitch, the only name that you know is Ninja, right? So right. you find these cases, but doesn't mean that all the content creators are the same. Not they are making all the same money. So I really do believe that with new generation of super young people that are actually really they don't know any other way to do actually content than this one, they will really right. open up to new opportunities, right? To even smaller people, and I really do believe that. You know, the big ones are helping in terms of understanding that you can make not just money, but you can create a movement of people. You can create a community. You can do so much more. So again, from millennials to now Gen Z, and Gen Z, they're going to go to Gen Alpha. And I'm really interested to see what is going to happen between content generation, metaverse, Roblox, all new ways that I'm, to be honest, I'm getting older to understand that. If I have to, if I do be transparent on that. But just to start wrapping up, is there also anything else that either, you know, you're watching or, you know, reading lately that is exciting you that you think we also should know about? And if there is any other app, could be not even just social media, yeah. something maybe that you're using lately that you're finding interesting.
Great questions. I think, you know, in the spirit of kind of in the entrepreneurial spirit, I would say creators are entrepreneurs. You and I both work for companies that, you know, you of course are a CEO, and I'm early at a company that, you know, I hope to spend a very long time with and be able to grow with. Read something interesting by Andy Dunn. If anyone's familiar, Andy Dunn is the CEO or was the founder of Bonobos, and wrote a book called Burn Rate. Really interesting, not finished with it yet, but it was really all about the lifestyle of a founder, the lifestyle of an entrepreneur, and how, or what I'm taking away with it is just how important it is to really kind of check back in and really appreciate or really kind of manage and be aware of one's mental health, one's physical health through all these experiences. I think sometimes we get so excited talking about the grind. We get so excited about talking about startup life and creators, you know, obviously doing everything they possibly can to earn a living. I want truly, you know, when I look at the creator economy, there's also a need to ensure that creators are checking back in with themselves. You know, you see creators want to take a break every now and again because their schedules are so strenuous and because there's so much pressure built up on them as they grow an audience. So too does that pressure grow. I really kind of my takeaway from a very successful entrepreneur's experience was that we really need to prioritize oneself throughout all that process. And I think that's something I hope as the creator economy continues to grow, there are resources for people well within that space to be able to seek out and be able to, again, check back into the self as they're going through these motions here. And you know, in terms of apps, you know, I'll go another direction from that answer, something completely different when I'm not, you know, reading a book. I actually just downloaded this app called, haven't spent much time with it, I will say, but I'm definitely seeing opportunity for creators to get involved. It's an app called Whatnot, which is very much in the live shopping space. And, you know, if you were to visit today, like I love watches, you know, you can go in and you have different portals and you can kind of target if you're a sneakerhead or you like baseball cards, you like watches or collectibles. There are live shopping kind of experiences where creators are actually putting what they have on sale on display. And of course, you know, there's a lot of talk about live shopping in terms of where it's going and, you know, how certain companies maybe they're slowing things down a little bit before they ramp things up in terms of their live shopping capabilities. And I was just really excited to see something fresh in the space. Not sure where they are, where they're going, but it was definitely a new experience that, you know, when I'm not on TikTok, I'm gonna hop on and see if I can spot that watch every now and again.
No, that is great to hear. I think that we added that in our social commerce report together with like Network and, you know, Lively Shop Live. There are so many with similar names that sometimes I start like, you know, confusing one with the other. But I also believe that I'm a big fan of what is happening in the live streaming. I do think that in the US, it's going to take much more time than what we actually, I think, initially forecasted compared to what is happening in China. That is really normal right there to do. Everyone, almost there is a host. And another thing that we talked in another episode is the difference between being a content creator. You can be a fantastic content creator. You can be an amazing influencer. Doesn't mean that you can be a good host for live streaming. And so I really do believe that another potentially role and title in the future in the US is going to be host of live stream shopping, and you have to learn how to do that. And there, in fact, in China, you have academies where you go and you learn how to present products, how to have a stock with you, how to engage with people, comment moderation in lifetime. It's another thing. So I'm happy to see that you are also, you know, getting there and just learning from maybe outside, you know, what is happening, but it's going to be the future for sure.
Yeah, just like being a podcast host like yourself, it's a very learned skill set. So, and you do a great job of it. So, you know, I think you're right. I think people are going to learn exactly that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Where people, as a last question, where people can find you online in case they want to connect with you?
That's a great question. I'm no LinkedIn influencer, I should say, but I'm a vast consumer of LinkedIn content these days. I think it's a really interesting space to be, both professionally and just personally, just seeing a vast opportunity there. So certainly on LinkedIn. I think you can find me on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I like to say that, or what I used to say when people were wondering, hey, do I need to be posting to be on TikTok? I used to say, well, I'm on Twitter, but I don't tweet. So I'm very much a consumer of content. But if you were to tap in and see what I like and what I favorite, I think you'll get a good sense of my personality. So that's typically where you can find me. SChristy44 is typically the handle. But, you know, certainly I'm there to continue to consume and to continue to see what's next in all these different spaces.
Fantastic. Sam, thank you so much. I love talking with you. I'm pretty sure that the audience loved also to know about your background, everything that you learned during the days in different industries. And I really do believe that you need a little bit of everything, right? In order to have a better overview, because too many people, in my opinion, sometimes they only do one thing and maybe you become really good at that, but you have some difficulties, right, in understanding also different point of view. So I really love your different backgrounds because I can really see that they will make a difference in a professional in their career. So Sam, thank you so much again for joining me today. For everyone else, this was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory, and see you in the next episode.